Well, good evening. This is Bill Blatchford. Welcome to our conference call this evening. Tonight we have Dr. Phil Davis from Temple, Texas with us. Tonight what we'd like to do is I'm going to be asking Dr. Davis some questions about his practice and what he's accomplished while he worked with Blatchford Solutions, why he joined our program and what he's done since then. My intention here tonight is that you all learn something that you can actually put in place in your practice tomorrow morning and from then on, for that matter, but especially something you can take away from this. Also, what I want to do, of course, is expose you to some of the things and the value that we bring to dental practices and have been doing for the last 20 years all across the country. Dr. Davis, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, where are you tonight, Phil?
I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana.
And I understand now you're from Temple, Texas. Tell us, first off, where is Temple, Texas?
Temple, Texas is about an hour north of Austin, Texas, and about 30 minutes south of Waco on Interstate 35.
Okay, now tell me what you're doing in New Orleans.
I'm on a motorcycle trip. I'm taking a vacation this week. It's spring break in my fine city, and I've taken a little trip from Temple to Natchez, Mississippi, and spent the night there, and then I took a ride up the Natchez Trace up to Jackson, over to Meridian, spent the night in Meridian, Mississippi, and then I took a ride over to Anniston, Alabama. I have relatives in each of these towns where I'm staying, and then I went down to Mobile, Alabama, through central Alabama. I had never been to Alabama, did not know there were mountains around the Birmingham area, so I've just had a good time exploring the world, and now I'm in New Orleans with staying at the home of my college roommate for 4 years.
Very good. So this is one of your 6 or 8 weeks of vacation, I understand.
Yes. Starting last year, I started taking 6 weeks vacation, and we're doing the same this year, and that means my staff, as well as me, my team, and myself, are off those 6 weeks. So they get basically a 6 weeks paid vacation.
Great. Well, Phil, why don't we start tonight, now that we know you're having a good time, why don't we start by giving us a little background, where you grew up, where you went to dental school, where you've held about your practice, how long you've been there in Temple, and what you were looking for when you joined our program. I believe that you somehow found a copy of our book, Playing Your A-Game, read that first and got interested.
I did. A brief biography. I'm a Texas boy.
We'd have never guessed.
Yeah, born and raised in Texas. And I went to high school in Huntsville, Texas, which is an hour north of Houston. Went to Baylor University, then the University of Texas Dental Branch at Houston. Graduated from dental school in 1981. I built a practice out in the rural part of Texas, really about halfway between Dallas and Houston on I-45. Was there for 5 years. That was pretty much, I was still learning a lot out there, naturally, right out of dental school. Anyway, I was a general dentist out there. I learned to do root canals and difficult extractions, et cetera, out there because I was the only guy in town. The town was only 800 people at the time that I was there. And I went out there because there was a lignite-fired generating station that was being built out there, and there were probably 5,000 people in the area during the construction of that. At the end of that time, about 5 years, the children started coming along, and we decided, we need to move to a bigger town. So I purchased a practice in Temple, Texas. I purchased it from a lady, a classmate of mine who was maybe two classes ahead of me down at UT. But I didn't know her. Anyway, I started my practice there, and we practiced along in a kind of a strip center, basically. Three operatory type practice, not unlike you see in many a town across the fruited plain. So about 4 years ago, I decided that maybe you could call it a midlife crisis or whatever. By the way, I'm 54 years old. I decided to take my practice in a different direction. I started early in my career when I first went to Jewett, Texas. I went to the Pankey Institute for two times, and I was in this rural practice, and I was brand new out of school, and I really could not see how do you do that kind of dentistry working on farmers and ranchers who really didn't value their teeth. So I pretty much kind of parked that idea and just did general dentistry. I did a lot of, dentures and partials and drill and fill type dentistry. But then when I moved to Temple, Texas, Temple has a very highly educated population. There's a regional hospital in my town.
What is the population there?
It's about 60,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And this hospital is, I think it's in somehow in cahoots with the Mayo Clinic up in Rochester, New Mexico, in Minnesota. So anyway, it's a big deal in our town. So I went from low-educated people to highly educated people, and that was quite a change for me. I felt at sometimes intimidated. However, it didn't take but a month or two of working on these people who are highly educated, and I found out they really had the same values for their teeth that the farmers and ranchers did. So I continued to do general dentistry. About 4 to 5 years ago, I decided I think I'm ready for a change. And this is my midlife change. I decided, okay, I'm going to go to the Las Vegas Institute to learn how to do some really nice cosmetic dentistry. So I began that journey, and about halfway through the journey there, I ran across a doctor who had been seeing you, Bill. And he's about 9 miles away from my town. And he was about, ahead of me in dental school. I knew him just from seeing him in the halls. And so I called this guy up. Mike Reese is his name. And I said, hey, do you mind if I bring my whole team down there to see you and meet with you? Because I would like to do the kind of dentistry you do. So we did do that and learned a lot that day. We took a day off, basically, just to run down there. And after meeting him and meeting with Sharon, his lady at the front desk, she said, "Have you ever heard of Bill Blatchford?" And I said, "No, never heard of him." And she said, "I really think you need to look at taking Bill Blatchford's course." And I said, "Look, I've been through quite a few practice management courses. I pretty much know what to do. And I want to learn the clinical aspect to be a really fine cosmetic dentist. Well, I talked to Mike. I called him one day and said, "Now, listen, this guy, Bill Blatchford, I know he's great and all this kind of stuff, but do I need to do that? I mean, this is a lot of money, you know." And he said, "Let me tell you, you can go out to LVI," and he happens to be an instructor there, "and you can learn all that wonderful dentistry, but if you can't sell it, what good is it going to do for you?" And that kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. I said, "You're exactly right. It's more than just learning the technical aspect. I really do need to know how to sell the dentistry, get people to say yes to what I can provide for them." So that's how I began my journey with Bill Blatchford, and it'll be 2 years this June that I've been with you now, Bill.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. You made that real easy for me. I don't have to ask you very many questions. I can see this is about 3 questions for me, and you'll cover the whole hour. That's great. So, well, tell me a little bit. What were you looking for? You wanted to do larger cases. You wanted to change the nature. You wanted to do more cosmetics. I believe about that time you had just committed to a new building.
That's exactly right. Part of this midlife crisis was, you know what, if I'm going to do this kind of dentistry, I really need to have my office reflect the image of doing that type of dentistry. And before I met you, I had gone ahead and had the wheels turning, had taken out the loan, et cetera, to build a very nice dental office, and which we are in, and we've been there a year and a half. But I knew that in order to do that, to go from zero debt to now $600,000 in debt, I needed to crank up the heat on the production side and of course, decrease any overhead that I might have that I didn't know about. I mean, Bill, I had pretty much thought I could do everything. I knew how to do everything, but I didn't have the accountability that you provide,
What do you mean by accountability? I mean, what are you talking about?
I mean, I needed somebody who would say, "Hey, why haven't you done this? Why are you putting off what you need to do, and to make it happen, to have you achieve your dream practice?"
Phil, besides accountability, now you're moving into this new office, and of course, the fear was that your expenses were going to go up. You were going back into debt. You hadn't been in debt in a number of years. Your production was doing okay. How much did your production go up in that first 12 months?
In the first 12 months, we went up $150,000.
Mm-hmm. And during that time, I believe you worked with less staff members.
Yes. I actually only had, I have three staff members presently, and at the time I had a three and a half. I had one lady who did my orthodontic work. I had picked up several years ago when I started orthodontics in my practice, Medicaid orthodontics. And I did that in order to have a ready patient base that I could practice on my new skills of straightening teeth. Little did I know, I wound up enjoying helping these kids to give them a leg up in life, and maybe they would not have to go on welfare someday because now they had a better self-esteem. But what you showed me was busyness did not exactly mean productivity. So, yes, we were busy and we had full days, but the bottom line wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that after my first meeting with you and Carolyn that I had to make the hard choice of Medicaid's got to go a different way.
Well, I didn't ask you to quit. I just wanted to know if you could afford that much charity every month.
Well, that was a nice
your choice.
Yes.
We determined that it was pretty much a charitable situation he was doing, but that was his choice to do it. And I said, if you want, you can continue. I just wanted you to realize that it's costing you this much money. It's a rather expensive hobby. What did you do to raise your production? I mean, what did you do different? I mean, I think some of the things that I teach people, most of you already know before you ever see me. What changed in your practice that your production went up?
Well, gosh, Bill, there's probably 100 different things that we've changed, but the ones that come to mind just right off the top of my head would be I started getting to work before the rest of my team members got there. I started wearing a tie. Some of the things that were scary, not necessarily hard to do, but it was scary to do, was to start asking for money up front.
Mm-hmm. What's happened to your accounts receivable?
Well, accounts receivable, we send out maybe less than 20 statements per month now.
Mm-hmm.
And before we started, it was probably averaging not more than 50. I was in pretty good shape to begin with on that. But my goal is for Melissa to not to send out zero statements and actually have a credit balance. And that's where we're working right now, is to have a positive AR rather than a negative AR.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things that we
How is your staff involved in presenting these large cases?
Well, now that we've got the bonus system in order, my team members actually, they feel as if they own, and they do, they own part of my practice now. So they're highly motivated to sell dentistry, whatever it may be. If it's Invisalign, if it's veneers, if it's crowns, I mean, they are in there selling that stuff, and because they know I'm going to be getting this. This is going to affect my paycheck this month.
Mm-hmm.
And so talking back about the accountability, now I have my team holding me accountable. You know, if I'm still a work in progress, by the way. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I have a tendency to go in.
Well, perfection's out there. It's like the horizon. You can never get there. It's just something we're aiming at, but we don't get there.
I work rather rapidly. My problem is I have to slow down to talk more with the patients, to become more relationship-oriented in that. And they stop me on that. They tell me, "Doctor, you're going to have to just slow down, take a breath." I mean, it's a big help to me because they're actually helping me change my personality to be more customer service oriented, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. What did you try? You tried to raise your production before. I mean, this was not the first time you'd tried it. To get your production up, get your income up.
Well, you know, and the way I would try to do that would be to add something new on the menu. You know, another procedure or something like that. That or add a gadget that would make. I have the wand in my office to give painless injections, and you know, I'd spend thousands of dollars going through all these things that we see at all the dental meetings. It's going to just be better than sliced bread, and yet I still had it was difficult for me to actually make that work. We all have these things on our shelf in the closet collecting dust that we thought were great ideas at the time, but we just didn't know how to implement them or whatever. And that's where
go ahead.
That's where the coaching comes in. It's nice to be able to call you and say, "Hey, what do you think I should do about this?"
Mm-hmm. What out of that 150,000 of increased production, how much of that would you say was net income to you at the end of the year?
Well, having the new office, and that was the first full year that it was in function, I expensed off a lot of things that we had to have that I did not or had not planned for.
Well, you and I figured that was about 100,000.
Yeah,
at least. Things that you expensed out right there.
At least
out of net.
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell you. I mean, exactly what I did because. I, as far as my my net, it was up. There's no question. I don't really have a number for that.
Well, a couple weeks ago, when you and I were going through some numbers from your year end, it looked like it was almost 150,000 when we took out when we added in the expense that you and your account. I mean, you had some excess money that you were able to, your accountant was able to write off under Section 179 as you expensed out.
Exactly. And
there was almost 50,000 on top of that, so.
I'm thinking, I'm going by my QuickBooks number. I had 150,000 more in collections than I had over the previous year, which was about a 23% increase. But like we said, there were so many things that I paid out of that $150,000 that did not go into my pocket,
right.
But it went into my office.
That's correct. And that was really net income is what I was getting at.
And when I met you at the Chicago Midwinter, you immediately said, "I think I can do $100,000 for you."
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a pretty easy number. I, you know, last year we took on just a little over 50 new clients, and we averaged well over $100,000 per client last year in net income. Now, sometimes, like in Phil's case, net income. Doesn't actually go on to a W-2. In Phil's case, he moved into this new office, and had he not had that extra $150,000, he would have had a decrease by about $100,000 in his W-2 because he had to buy all of those things, and the accountant at the end of the year said, "Well, we can write this much off. It's about $125,000 we can write off now." So, and that is something you and all of you need to be aware of with your accountants, that you can expense out a lot of things like that. Phil, tell me a little bit about your schedule today. You're not working more. You're working less. You're taking 6 weeks off. How do you spread that out during the year? And what's your work week look like?
Okay. I work Monday and Tuesday, basically 8 to 5. Wednesday, I go in at 11:30 and work till 5 straight through. I allow my team to go to a Bible study that my wife teaches. And then Thursday, we work 8 to 5, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Friday, I may be up there, as you call it, a buffer day. I may be doing case workups or paperwork or whatever. We do answer the phone until noon, from 8 till noon. But that's the way my work week looks. Now, we've strategically put throughout the year a week's vacation, a week off, if you will, the whole office, once every 6 or so weeks. Now, this year, I am planning, I've never done this before, but I am planning on taking a cruise with my wife for 2 weeks in August.
Excellent.
So we're going to see how that goes. I mean, I've got to have enough stash up to pay, make a payday and then another payday. And
well, here's one thing. I'll throw a comment in here for the doctors listening on this program. A concept that we developed a number of years ago, and it came out of studying, at that time I had 62 clients, and I studied I studied lots of factors on dental practices, but one thing I studied was diagnosis per day. Now, definition of that is how much dentistry do you talk to patients about in a given day? And the way I kept track of that myself is I carried an appointment card in my pocket, and I'd go into hygiene, and my hygienist and I would talk to a patient about, oh, let's say, a couple onlays. And so I would jot down dollar amount on my little card how much those two onlays were that we talked about. Now, it didn't count unless we actually talked to the patient about how much the fee was, because in my feeling, if a patient doesn't even get to a point where they're interested, what's it cost, they're not too interested. So we'd tell them how much it was, and I'd jot it down. End of the day, we'd add that up, and we kept track of that. And I kept track of that on a group of 62 doctors for 2 years. And I charted that, and I graphed it several different ways. And one of the graphs I made was on days of the week. Well, we found that most doctors could maintain that intensity, maintain that level of enthusiasm and energy to present dentistry for 4 days, but they couldn't go five. As a matter of fact, we noticed it starting to fall off after about 3.5 days, and so we said, okay, everybody gets out of the office on Friday. Nobody works 5 days a week. But then I looked at another trend that was developing, and I noticed that somewhere between 6 and 8 weeks after a vacation, we would see a decrease in this diagnosis per day. Now, this was all on the premise that if we diagnose this and present the treatment, it may get accepted. If we don't present it, there's a real slim chance it will get accepted, real slim as in none. And so then I started thinking about, well, take a look at this, and then something that's become very clear in the last couple of years to me is that there are literally two economies in the world. And the economy that most of us, and we as dentists are certainly part of this, it's called the time and effort economy. And that's because we grow up with backgrounds that the more we worked, the more we got paid. We put our staffs on hourly pay, and the more hours they work, the more they get paid. And so that's called time and effort economy. But then I started to realize that dentists, as entrepreneurs, we don't get paid for time and effort. We get paid for results. We get paid for how much we produce, not how much time we spend doing it. And I get to thinking a little bit about the fact, you know, we have a lady out there at the front desk. She gets paid by the hour, and she's in charge of my schedule. I've got a dental assistant who gets paid by the hour, and she's really the one that collaborates with the person at the front desk how long these procedures should be appointed. Now, the only incentive for them, you see, is to the incentive that we've done, the monetary incentive in the past, traditionally, has been the way they get a raise, they work more hours. Well, that's fine. They work more hours, but that requires the doctor to work more hours. So we had to shift that whole mentality in an office like Phil's to so the whole team understands that it's not how much time we spend in the office, it's what we get done while we're there. Now, Phil, we had to talk to him a little bit to coach him through this to get from his 2 weeks vacation up to 6 weeks, especially in the year that he had just opened a new office and gone $600,000 in debt. But you see, unless you're turning patients away, and unless Phil is turning patients away in August, being gone for 2 weeks won't make any difference. I started taking a month off in the summer when I was practicing dentistry. I took the month of August off, and people have always said, well, how could you do that? And if I'm in a seminar, I say, well, how many of you work with appointments? How many of your patients come in on by appointment? And everybody's hand goes up, and I'll say, I'll tell you, it's so simple. You don't make any appointments in August. You make the appointments in July. You make them in September. You make them in October, but you don't make them in August. And so you can take your 2 weeks off. And this is a concept that I want everyone on the call to really grasp, that this is right there for you, that unless you're turning people away, you can work a lot less time and make just as much, and you can pay your staff just as much because you're still getting the same amount of production done. So, Phil, don't worry about it. Take your 2 weeks off and go have a good time.
That's what I'm going to do. It's something that, you know, we're now empty nesters. We're going to take some dancing classes. We're going to take a nice Cunard line cruise over in the Mediterranean. So I'm really looking forward to that, and a chance for me to spend time with my wife and to, try to shore up things in that category, too.
Well, to me, this is all about balance, and you've heard me say this a lot of times, but so many times we work hard to get a practice established, and then we get the thing established, and we find ourselves just repeating the same year over and over again. And then when we get to this stage, and like you said, empty nesters, my wife and I have been empty nesters for 15 years, longer than that now, and it's a great time of life. You have the means, and yet so many dentists are so worried about if they don't show up at their office 5 days a week and 50 weeks out of the year, things are going to fall apart. And I think that's the whole key, is creating that balance in your life so you can have time with your family and have time with that motorcycle you've got. Phil, what, besides the fact that your profit has gone up and you have more time off, what are some of the other changes that you would recommend for doctors that are on the call tonight that you've put in place in your practice that have really worked?
Well, the number one thing that has helped my life, and it makes me enjoy going to work more, and it makes my team enjoy going to work more, is the fact that we implemented the BAM bonus system.
Why don't you tell them about the BAM bonus system?
That is a system where we are basically based on if 20% should be the amount of total cost of labor.
20% of your gross.
20% of the gross. We take that and multiply the cost of their employment times 5, the 20%. That gives us a number that is the bare-ass minimum, the BAM, okay? Mm-hmm. And at that number, if we produce, and it's an average of production and collections, anything above that number, in my case, that's about $52,000 a month, they get paid the 20% divided amongst them evenly. So for the last, this is March. So I'm going to say for the last 15 months, my ladies have received a bonus that has been at least $750 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Per person. Per person.
Yeah.
Last year it was $1,000.
And that gets them excited.
Yeah, and that was the first, I mean, we're talking 6 months into the program, we were already BAMing. And you talk about getting some people energized and enthusiastic. I mean, if I am in there not playing my A game and I kind of blow something up, you know, blow it off or, oh, no big deal, they're telling me about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the accountability that I'm talking about. And I'm sitting there, I'm going, you're right. I did. I failed you. And it is a team effort. It's a wonderful feeling now that it's not just me, and they're just showing up to get a paycheck now.
You know, Phil, you were at a Peak Performance a few months ago, there was an office there that's been in our program for 20 years, and they have literally hit bonus 20 years straight. They've never missed. And that doctor, I'll tell you, he knows that he's from Longview, Washington, and he truly knows the difference between having a staff and a team. As one of our doctors pointed out, that she has a team of people working for her. A staff is an infection. And when you get a group of people that all have a common vision and they have the same goals and they're motivated by the same things that motivate the doctor, it's magic. And what happens in most offices that I see is that there's a bonus system in place that never really works. And the staff kind of gets, and I'm calling it a staff intentionally, because they don't really trust anybody on this is never going to happen. It's based on profit. And then at the end of the year, the doctor goes out and buys a new X-ray unit or something. The doctor's accountant comes in and says, well, I'm sorry, ladies, there's no bonus. This bonus system is so simple. They understand the rules. They know what they have to do every single day to make it work. And when they're motivated by the same thing that motivates you, you don't have to micromanage. You don't have to push them. Like Phil says, he goes into his hygiene room, and she's talking to a patient about treatment. Now, we would never talk to a patient about treatment we would not do in our own family. I mean, and I can trust Phil. He would never do that, nor would his staff. But Phil comes in and says, oh, well, it's probably a good idea, but we can watch it. They're going to probably take him out in the hall and have a conversation.
Well, that's exactly right, Bill, because for a lot of my practice career before I got involved with you, I would almost feel guilty that I would have to tell the patient, you know, you got to have a crown. You know, this filling is just too big. It's leaking. You got to have a crown. You know, it's kind of like, and I mean, basically, my eyes, the shackles have been removed now, and I'm going, hey, you got something wrong with your teeth. You need a crown.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it. You can say no, but no doesn't mean never. It could be next year we'll do this. But I and one of the things I'm doing that I'm trying to recession-proof my practice by diagnosing things that people may or may not want. It's discretionary income. I'm talking to them about veneers. I'm talking about whitening. I'm talking about things like that. And they can say no to them, and no one's ever died for having gray teeth or crooked teeth, right? But I'm trying to present treatment to people to let them know, hey, this might be something I want to do, even though the economy's down right now.
Well, you know, it's really funny. I was today I met with, as Phil knows, I'm a member of an executive coaching group. We meet here in Chicago 4 times a year, and these are all entrepreneurs from all over the country, and you know, all the stuff you read in the newspapers, we had a nice discussion about it today. There are 50 of us in the room, and I'd say that probably 80-90% of them have had the biggest quarter they've ever had in their life. And, you know, the economy is interesting. I want all of the doctors to really understand the economy. There's still just as much money out there. It's just that every 4 years in this country, the politicians and the press conspire to create a recession. How do you create a recession? You talk people into how the sky is falling, and they listen to Chicken Little, and they quit spending money, and that causes a recession. Now, how does a recession affect most of your patients? The same way it affected the cab driver today who was talking about the economy. And I asked the cab driver, so are you still working? Yes. Are your fares still paying you? Yes. So how's the recession affecting you? He says, well, fuel prices are really high. I said, that probably explains that $2 surcharge you have posted on the dashboard of your car for fuel cost. Is that right? He says, yeah, and he laughed. The economy hasn't affected him, has it? Down there where Phil lives, for example, it's easy to buy into the recession, but you know what they produce down in Temple, Texas? Oil. And for you folks that have pulled up at the filling station lately, those folks are doing well. People in the Midwest that are farmers, they can't believe it. Check John Deere stock. So it's a certain parts of the economy are always shifting around, but all of you have to work at recession-proofing your practice. And part of that is refusing to take part. Quit reading the newspaper every morning. Quit watching the news. And quit letting your staff buy into this whole thing about there's a recession going on. And keep on offering your patients the best treatment possible. Some will take it. Some will think about it. Some won't, but it'll be okay. And I think that's one of the biggest things that everyone on this call needs to work on. It's so easy for you and your team to start, you know, as Lou Holtz said, start reading your own obituary in the newspaper. You've got to stop watching this and keep it positive, and people will continue on. Many of our clients are having their biggest months ever. We had a conference call 2 nights ago. One of my clients in Detroit, the last 2 months, biggest he's ever had. Now, he's been with me a number of years, but Detroit's supposed to be having a recession going on. So there you are. Well, I want to ask some of the doctors some questions here, or some of the doctors ask you some questions, Phil. So some of the doctors on the call, if you hit your 6 button, it'll open up your line. You can ask Phil any question you want, what he does in his practice that maybe has made some of the changes.
Bill, while they're thinking their question, one of the things that I am continuing to do, that one of the best pearls that you taught us was, would you like fries with your hamburger?
Very good.
Meaning, you're already in that quadrant. You're doing that crown on tooth number 19, but 18 looks like it's bombed out too. Hey, Ms. Jones, would you like for us to go ahead while we have this numbed? Would you like to go ahead and do that crown too? Now, that seems like a very simple thing, but as we as dentists, we're going, oh, but that is now, I've just doubled the cost. Now, instead of $1,000, it's $2,000. She'll never say yes. Believe it or not, we had a lot of people last year that said, yep, go ahead and do it.
2 days ago, I had a client call me and said his dental assistant turned a $5,000 case into a $15,000 case by asking that question. Now, that's kind of a joke among our clients because my brothers raise potatoes, and I've said that question had made my brothers very well off, made McDonald's wealthy by asking, would you like fries with your burger? So that's our joke. But it's really, would you like to go ahead and do, you fill in the blank, and see what they say. And no matter what they say, it's okay. We're not going to talk them into it. If they say no, we're not going to try and re-educate them. We're just going to let them whatever they say. But we do ask the question. Good point.
Yep.
You can all take that home to use it tomorrow. Would you like fries with your burger? And then you can even ask it that way if you want. Some of my clients do. And then the patient says, what do you mean? And they say, well, do you want to do the tooth next to it at the same time? Real easy.
I have a question. This
Go ahead.
Is Paul Kenworthy.
Go ahead.
Phil, are there any particular things that you have worked on that you felt has been successful as far as increasing sales and training with your team, efforts that have really, really helped in that area?
Okay, that's a good question. There's a number of things we've done. One of the things we did that I received about $20,000 of dentistry out of it was I spoke to my local Rotary Club, which I've been a member for almost 20 years. Never had I talked to the Rotary
Club. Who suggested you do that, Phil?
Bill Blatchford. Bill helped me with getting...
Bill said he would never do that.
That's right. I do not do that. Well, guess what? I did it, I enjoyed it, and we had fun. The other thing, though, that we've implemented that I've found it's just fun to do, too, is read books on sales. All of my team, we go through different books, and we basically do a little book report on it. And in our staff meetings and in our BMW 4x4s, every month we meet for 4 hours and work on the practice, we'll talk about what did we learn, what pearls of wisdom did we get from the books that we've been reading. And some of those books we've been reading, most of them have been Jeffrey Gittimer's books, all the little books of getting your patients to say yes and the yes attitude and all that. Some of the things that we've done that we've worked on consciously is just think, dream bigger. Just imagine doing the bigger case and seeing if you can do it. I mean, it sounds crazy, but it really does work. And a lot of times I have to watch myself. I'll get kind of down in the dumps that I've been told no several times, and I have to go, I can't let that negative energy start pulling me down, and I have to go back to thinking positive, and it's amazing how that does work.
I think you and your staff have worked on some scripting, too, as long as...
Big time scripting. We're actually doing... it was hard at first, I will admit. Another thing that was difficult to do, but we videotape ourselves going through a scenario that maybe someone came in this week, and we write it down, and we try to figure out, okay, now let's work through that. Much like you would practice a football play or any other type of athletic thing that is just kind of repetitious over and over until you finally get it down to where the next time that happens, we've already been there and done that. We know what to say now because we've already practiced that in our meetings.
See, I've been a pilot for about 37 years now, and it's one of the things that we do in training is we train for emergencies all the time, and when those emergencies happen, and I've had a number of them happen over the years, and you've already been there. You've already practiced it so many times and rehearsed it that it just comes second nature. And it's the same thing with these things come up in your office. It's the same thing with the incoming phone calls. Those need to be scripted. They need to be practiced and rehearsed because the same questions come in every day, And the person on the phone gets off the phone and says, gosh, I wish I'd remembered to say that because they haven't practiced. Or you have these situations in hygiene or in your new patient exams, and it's real easy to, if you've practiced it, but if you haven't practiced, it's like it's new every single time it comes up, and you just keep doing the same thing over and over again. So I think the rehearsal is critical.
And goes along with that, too, I'm thinking of things that are easily dropped that you start, and that would be the spa amenities. It takes time to do some of the spa amenity stuff. Some of it is easy, some of it's a little bit more laborious. And we've all said, now look, once we start this, the next time that person comes in and we don't provide it to them, they're going to go, what happened to the hand whatever they did?
Yeah, consistency is critical.
Yeah.
Consistency is critical.
So we're all the time trying to revisit that issue to stay on course, and that means the hygienist as well as my assistancy. So, you know, because we want them to have a nice experience as they go to the dentist. But that's just part of it. And we fumble that from time to time, too, but we try to get back on to it.
Other questions from other doctors?
I've got a question.
Go ahead.
I'm curious to know what you're doing perhaps differently about marketing and if your new patient flow has changed.
That's a great question. Yes, since I've been with Bill, I've increased my marketing budget quite a bit. Naturally, I have the Yellow Pages and that, but I've been working with Rocket Dog to develop a new look for my website, and we've done several newspaper. I don't have, my town is so small, we don't have really a neat cosmetic magazine that comes out like in the bigger, larger cities like Austin and Dallas, where you may have the plastic surgeons as well as all these hotshot cosmetic dentists that are in there. So we basically run ads in the paper. It might be for Zoom or Lumineers or some of these things that they've already heard of, that's, you know, millions of dollars have already been spent on branding that particular item. We do run some specials, if you will. If it's Mother's Day, we discount the cost of our Zoom, and we do see, every time we do it, we see a bump in our new patient flow. And so marketing is critical because most of the people, there are other great dentists in my town, and there's probably 35 general dentists in my town. But nobody out there is marketing. Nobody is telling people what they do.
See, it's all changed. For those of you on the call, everything has changed in the fact that there are so many choices for people today to spend their discretionary income on. And if you just take a look in any store, go to any city, and the choices out there available that are being marketed to your patients other than dentistry have grown immensely. And dentistry needs to market as well. And we believe that, first off, you have to have all your internal systems in place, and you have to be asking for referrals, which is still the greatest marketing going. But in addition to that, you have to do some external. Now, we have a few clients that don't do any external, and we have also had some clients who have done all kinds of external, but they don't do the internal. You have to do them both. You have to do both to have a real healthy patient flow. And just a rule of thumb to remember is that you're probably going to lose about 20% of your patients every year if all systems are perfect. People move, people die, people marry, and they go to the spouse's dentist, et cetera. So it's the average is around 20%. So if you have 4 days of hygiene a week, you have about 800 patients in recall, you're going to lose 160 patients a year. So you have to have 160 patients new coming in just to stay even. And I call anything below that pathologic. And we're looking at many practices today that literally have a pathologic new patient flow. And back when we did temporary dentistry, that worked. We could just keep doing same fillings over and over again. But now the dentistry has become so much better and so much more permanent. Those are pathologic situations that have to be corrected. So, yes, you have to market. Other questions?
Bill, this is Sharon from Dr.
Sharon.
Reese's office in
Go
Bryan.
Ahead. Hi, Sharon.
I met with Dr. Davis several years ago in our office and met him again in the peak performance that we all attended together. And as a networking thing, he told me something that I thought was so valuable for his internal marketing. Dr. Davis, could you please tell the other doctors what you did for the Ronald McDonald House?
Yeah, we started a referral check. Anybody that sends a patient to us, we will send a $25 check in their name in honor of that person sending the new patient.
Oh, good for you.
And so, of course, the Ronald McDonald House there in Temple loves it. They're always looking for money. We were asking, do you need phone cards or do you need something other than that? They said, hey, money's always great. So a $25 gift every time someone, that's the internal marketing. And we tell all of our new patients that come in that you're going to be getting a letter from Ronald McDonald House in honor of you for doing this. So
perfect.
That's one of the things we do, yeah. Now, I'll tell you, it goes along with that, Sharon, and you know this, but we go to business after hours things. Our Chamber of Commerce has this after hours thing every month. We, as a team, go from 5 o'clock on Thursday till about 5:30, 5:45, go have some vittles and some drinks, and we hand out cards. We try to meet as many people as we possibly can, and I guarantee you I'm the only dentist. I've seen maybe one other dentist there at these things, but that is an underutilized networking opportunity for all of us.
Networking is one of, yeah, I see internal, everything you do inside, then networking's first, and then you start your marketing, your media type stuff. You develop a logo, you develop internal, or your package, as Rocket Dog helps with that a lot, helping Phil with that. But then it's you guys have got to get out in the community and meet people. You can't be the invisible dentist wearing your camos to work under the cover of darkness in the morning, sneak in the back door of your office, eat your lunch in the private office, and sneak out under the cover of darkness again at night and expect new patients to show up. It's just not going to happen. Phil, would you do this again?
I mean, in a heartbeat.
Okay.
It's a no-brainer. It's basically, I'm getting what I paid you for, and that is to take my practice to the next level to where I can practice my last 10 years of practice, should I decide to practice that long, doing the things I want to do. Now, as you well know, I am still a provider for Metropolitan Life, which is a big, huge player in my city.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is, and we've hashed and rehashed this, but our goal is we want to be off of the MetLife plan within the next year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a delicate situation. That's very scary because we do not want to torpedo our practice. We like the patients that we get, but dealing with the MetLife fee schedule is ridiculous. Nobody wants to be told what you can charge and what you can't charge.
And our philosophy on insurance is you cannot, if your practice is insurance-driven, and many are, is you stay on those insurance companies until you replace that income with non-insurance patients. You do not go out and drop all your insurance companies and hope it's going to turn out great. That is economic suicide. Unless you're in Texas and have one of those oil wells pumping away in your backyard, don't do that. And so with Phil, we're very carefully monitoring, and he's already dropped some insurance companies, but MetLife is a major player in his community. And until he replaces that income, and we're keeping track of that, he cannot afford to do that. So it's just a matter of, it's a business decision. Well, I want to thank you, Phil. And does anybody else have any other questions? I've got time for one or two more questions for Phil, and I'll be quiet for a minute and let you ask a couple questions.
This is Carol. I work at Dr. Ivan's office, and I'm a hygienist. Some of the questions I hear from some doctors is, how do you function with only three staff members?
Well, it's when we go to work, we work. I mean, the bottom line is everybody's cross-trained. We're in the process of even making that even better. I mean,
What do you mean cross-trained, Phil?
I mean, we're, I'll take the money, and I'll run the credit card if I have to. I answer the telephone. I do that probably 20% of the time. If I've got my lady who's at the front desk has been with me for 15 years. Part of that 15 years, she used to be my chairside assistant. Well, now that she's at the front desk, if things are running tight in the back for whatever reason, she's back there helping set up or take down, or she can help me with the patient to get it started, to, you know, numb the patient up, or whatever is required.
And does your hygienist and assistant know how to collect money and make appointments and things too?
Absolutely. They're the best. I'm still working on that, but they all know how to take money, and we are computerized, so we appoint from in the back. We have enough computers up front. We have a consultation room to where it's easy for them to go into that consultation room if there are people at the front desk, to be out of the line of sight, so to speak, where they can do financial arrangements.
But anybody can do it.
Yeah, anybody can do that.
And does it.
And does it. So
yeah.
It is. It's playing basketball and not football. None of these jobs are, that's my job or that's your job. Now we're all in it together. We just, you know, put our shoulders together. And
no job descriptions anymore.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent.
And everybody, yes, like you said, everybody is on a salaried pay scale. It works very well for them. I mean, it's just, they know the system. They understand. They hurt when somebody calls to cancel at the last moment. It was going to be, you know, 3 crowns or 4 crowns. They are now feeling what I feel when somebody no shows.
That's so great.
And it's tough. I mean,
that's a great team.
Yeah, we still have no-shows. We're still working on that. Collecting the money up front is helping. It's to the point where, you know, someday it will be there. That's part of this dreaming big I was talking about, because we never thought that would be possible to have the money paid up front before we do the dentistry. I mean, you know, it's just, it seems in opposition to the world, you know. You go eat your meal and then you pay for it. Well, we're telling them to pay for it and then you go get your meal, you know. So
they tend to show up better, don't they?
They do. They absolutely do. When they own that spot, they do it. And I mean, the other one of the commitments that we've made to ourselves as a team is we have about 9 or 10 different commitments, and one of them is we want to be the on-time team. I like to see the patient. If it's at 8:30, then I want to be there 8:30 seeing that patient.
Mm-hmm.
And get started with them, get them going, blah, 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 talk to them a little bit, and then let them, you know, talk to Cynthia for a while or whatever. So that's a big deal, is no more running behind time. We're doing block booking, which, Bill, you suggest. And that can be scary when you've got tomorrow's morning and there's nothing going on, and all of a sudden somebody comes in and, hey, guess what? We can do the 4 crowns tomorrow morning. How does that suit you? So that has worked out extremely well to do the block booking.
Well, Phil, I want to thank you very much for taking your time out of your motorcycle trip. I know you're on vacation. I know you're out there having a great time. I mean, we caught you when you're at least have that motorcycle parked.
No
but
problem.
I want to thank the doctors on here also for being on the call tonight. You'll each get a call from one of our representatives. And I want you to think about something for a moment, is that, you know, you think back in your life and good things tend to happen when you say yes to things, and usually nothing happens when you say no. But we will respect if you say no, you're not interested, but I would encourage you to at least talk to our representative and say you're not interested, and we won't bug you. We absolutely will not bug you at all. We won't keep calling you or... But if you're interested in what we do, sit down with one of our representatives and have a phone conversation and see if it's something that fits for you. It doesn't fit for everybody, but it might fit for you. So thank you very much. Have a nice evening. And again, Dr. Davis, thank you very much for your information. And I know that and if you have other questions you'd like to ask Dr. Davis, I'm sure you could give him a call at his office or email him. He'd be happy to answer those for you.
Good night, everybody. I'm heading down to the French Quarter as we speak.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.